From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to Washington Watch, your beacon of truth here in our nation's capital that enables you to navigate today's complex issues. Over the next hour, we're going to go beyond the headlines in engaging with national leaders and newsmakers to uncover the truth that matters most to you and your family. I'm your host, Tony Perkins, and Washington Watch starts now.
I saw this as about a failure of moral clarity, deeming you unfit for public office and call for your resignation in February. With the outbreak of campus riots, I'm only more resolute, so I will say it again. You must resign. If I were to grade your time as secretary based on the state of post-secondary education, I would also give you an F.
That was North Carolina Congresswoman Virginia Fox, chair of the House Education Committee, earlier today calling on the Secretary of Education, Miguel Cardona, to resign because he has failed in his role. We're going to talk with a member of the committee, Illinois Congresswoman Mary Miller, a little bit later here on Washington Watch. And is the diplomatic rift between the U.S. and Israel growing? Media reports are claiming the U.S. hid the terms of the ceasefire with Hamas from Israeli officials. We're going to talk with Simcha Rothman, a member of the Israeli parliament, in just a moment. And are these hollow words?
My commitment to the safety of the Jewish people, the security of Israel, and its right to exist as an independent Jewish state is ironclad, even when we disagree.
That was President Joe Biden earlier today at the Holocaust Remembrance Ceremony here in Washington, D.C. We're going to talk with Kansas Senator Roger Marshall about the Biden administration blocking military supplies to Israel. And does it make sense if neighboring countries will not take refugees from Gaza because of security concerns that the U.S. would take them?
The accusation that the U.S. could be less safe if there were refugees brought into the United States. What is the
response? This goes back to the first question, right, where I was saying that this is a country of immigrants. This what is makes us stronger, right? And I think that's a really important.
That was White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre last week on Air Force One responding to a question from a reporter regarding the reports that refugees from Gaza were coming to the United States. We're going to talk with the former Secretary of Homeland Security during the Trump administration, Chad Wolf, a little bit later here on Washington Watch. And here's some news today. The Boy Scouts have announced a name change. Today, they're now calling the organization Scouting America. Now, the change is to make them more inclusive since girls are now in Boy Scouts. Now, if they had asked me, I would have said they should have changed their name to Zacata Scouts because they are a hollow shell of what they once were, which is what happens when you capitulate to the cultural terrorist. Megan Kilgannon joins me here in studio a little bit later to talk about that and other news items. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you miss anything, you can find it all at the website, TonyPerkins.com. Israeli tanks rolled into the Gazan city of Rafah today, leading a limited IDF operation to destroy Hamas brigades and infrastructure in that city. Now, elsewhere today in Cairo, Israeli officials continued negotiations for an agreement that would include a ceasefire, at least temporarily, and the exchange of hostages. Joining me now to discuss this, the latest from Israel's war against Hamas is a member of the Knesset, Simcha Rothman. He is a part of the, as I mentioned, Israeli Knesset for the National Religious Party, Religious Zionism, and the chair of the Knesset's Constitution, Law, and Justice Committee. MK Rothman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hi, Shalom.
So give us the latest. Today's operations did not appear to be the anticipated full ground invasion of Rafah. Is there more to come?
I really hope so. I do deeply believe that the pressure that we got from outside, some of it sadly also from the United States administration that delayed their attack on Rafah, did not do well, not for the hostages and not for the war effort. I really hope the operation in Rafah will expand and we will make sure to eliminate Hamas and take control of the Gaza Strip, because that's the only way we will be safe.
Are the reports accurate that there's concern that the United States, those negotiating this ceasefire, withheld information from Israel?
I don't know exactly what's happening in the negotiation rooms. The negotiation should, and I hope that's the way it is, remain behind closed doors, because nothing good comes when leaks from negotiation rooms arrive, definitely not for the hostages. But I do think that there, for many, too long, I would say, we did not hear a very clear statement, the statement that should have been heard long ago, that the 100% responsibility and blame on the well-being of the hostages and the fact that they are not home yet is on the Hamas. Israel should not be put under pressure. The only pressure should be on Hamas, and actually on Hamas supporters and enablers, namely Qatar. The fact that the pressure is on Israel is really a shame.
So, MK Rothman, give us a sense of where the Israeli community, the citizens of Israel, are right now as they see this unfolding. I mean, we're 7 months into this. Hostages are still being held. The United States reports coming, the administration not acknowledging them, but there's reports saying that military shipments being delayed to Israel. What's the sense in Israel among Israelis?
So first, I really hope those reports will turn out to be not accurate and not true, because the fact that we always the United States and the people of the United States as our allies, and I saw the response from some of the key players in the Republican Party that said very loudly that delaying the supplies during wartime to an ally is not something anyone that calls himself an ally should do. So I really hope those reports will be deemed untrue. But the people of Israel are very united in every poll, in every person you ask, and also in the political system. There is 99 Knesset members said no to enforcing Palestinian state on the people of Israel, which is the vast majority of the Knesset, of our parliament. The people in Israel are behind the IDF forces. We support, everyone supports the war effort, and actually everyone sends their children to this fight. It's not just saying it in a poll when it's far away and it doesn't matter. Everyone sends a family member or a son or a brother or a cousin to the war to make sure that Israel is safe. We must eliminate this threat of Hamas. We all remember, and we are speaking today, a day after Holocaust Remembrance Day in Israel, that the never again is not just a saying. We need to make sure that the people, to take them seriously, the people that are calling to destruction of the state of Israel and of the Jewish people, and fight them and eliminate this threat, because we cannot have this threat being exercised again, as we saw on October 7th.
I 100% agree. I do want to go back to your comments about the Republican leaders here. I've actually spoken privately with some of the Republican leadership, and they're trying to verify these reports because they have not yet been verified. But there's outrage if this is in fact true, because especially after the vote last week to get these resources to Israel, as you said, in the middle of a war. I want to ask you another question, MK Rothman. Earlier today, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu called Israel's military, their control of Rafah border, the border crossing, a very important step. Why is this strategically important for Israel?
So Israel, of course, fights Hamas and trying to eliminate as many Hamas combatants and rockets and tunnels and all the tools they used and they plan to use to kill our citizens. So that's the war effort. The border, the Rafah crossing, the border to Egypt was one of the main sources to pass to smuggle arms into the Gaza Strip. By the way, by doing so, the fact that both Egypt and sadly also, I must say, the United States said in the past that they will do what they can, and they promised that there will be no weapons that coming through the Rafah border, the border of the Gaza Strip with Egypt. And sadly, we all saw what came through there. So blocking it is very important because that breaks the supply chain of weapons, rockets, and other war materials for the Hamas. And also, that's a source of income to Hamas. So so to take this Rafah crossing and take it away from the hands of the Hamas will make Hamas weaker and hopefully, with God's help, get the war shorter and the chances of getting the hostages greater.
That has continued to be a supply line coming across that border, even during the midst of the war.
Yes, of course, Israel and Egypt had some effort. Of course, Israel tried to see what's coming through some intel options, but Egypt is the key. And many things were smuggled in, and I don't know how efficient was the supervision by Egypt, because as we saw, many things got in. So yes, it was operative. Many people got in and out through the Rafah crossing to Gaza. The lie for the past few years, people were talking about Israel that doing a blockade over Gaza. Rafah crossing is the border with Egypt, and Israel had no control of it. So that put in context all the lies that we have heard about Israel barricading Gaza.
MK Rothman, final question for you. Just got about 30 seconds left. But Hamas dragging their feet in the negotiations as it pertains to releasing the hostages. Is there a growing concern that many of these hostages may no longer be alive?
Yes, sadly, we know already more than 30. We just got announcement today of another hostage that was considered, that we didn't know what happened with him, and now it was confirmed that he actually was murdered on October 7th, and Hamas is holding his body. Of course, Hamas is in charge and he's responsible of the well-being of the hostages and what's going on there. And the situation is becoming worse every day. That's why I'm emphasizing the importance of applying pressure on Qatar, on anyone who enables right. Hamas. The leadership of Hamas sits today in Qatar every day. So the pressure can come and should come from all the world.
All right. MK Rothman, I want to thank you for joining us as we continue to track events there in Israel. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
And folks, I want to encourage you to be a part of Praying For and Standing With Israel on May the 19th. To be a part of that, text Israel to 67742. All right. When we come back, citizens from Gaza coming to the U.S., we're going to talk about it. Don't go away.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leela Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to have you with us on this Tuesday. Again, let me invite you to join us May the 19th for a special Sunday, Pray For and Stand With Israel Sunday. To find out more about how you can be a part of it, text Israel to 67742, as you've heard just in our previous segment, we need to be praying for Israel and pray for the peace of that land and that this situation would be resolved quickly. Well, continuing this line of discussion, the Biden administration plans to bring evacuated inhabitants of Gaza to the United States as refugees. And this continues to draw criticism as the administration offers zero evidence it has addressed how to adequately vet this high-risk population for terrorist ties. I mean, neighboring countries won't take them, so why would the United States? The millions of migrants that have poured into the country due to the Biden border crisis has security officials already on edge for a potential terrorist attack. How would a Gazan refugee relocation program increase that risk? Well, joining me now to discuss this is Chad Wolf. He was a former acting secretary for the Department of Homeland Security, now chairman of the Center of Homeland Security and Immigration at the America First Policy Institute. Chad, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, thanks for having me, Tony. Good to be here.
Let me just ask you point blank, your reaction to the Biden administration apparently planning to bring Gazan refugees to the United States.
Well, as you indicated in your intro, I'm just as skeptical and concerned about that plan as I think most Americans are. You kind of summed it up well. I think there's a lot of questions that they need to answer. But first, I think they need to explain to the American people why they need to do this. This idea that we need to bring folks from Gaza all the way to the United States, when sort of the principle and the rule of thumb is when you want to resettle refugees
out of an area that perhaps is dangerous, that you want to do that as close to home as possible. So if countries like Egypt and Jordan are not taking these individuals because presumably there are security concerns, well, what is the Biden administration doing that allays those security concerns, and why won't EU countries and other countries in the region take them? And so I think the Biden administration has got a lot of
of explaining to do if they actually go forward with this proposal. I'm hopeful, though I'm not, you know, waiting with bated breath that they will abandon this. But I think there's a lot of unanswered questions, and it gives me a lot of pause to see them going down this road.
Now, Chad, you were a part of securing our southern border during the Trump administration. You got that under control. So immigration is something you know quite a bit about. Is this not a break with like a four-decade-old process that we had as it pertains to Palestinians? Very few of them came to the United States over the last 40 years. This is a significant change in that policy, is it not?
Well, I think it is. And we also have a refugee process that if you want to be resettled here in the United States, that it's a very lengthy project because there's a number of security checks and there's a number of vetting steps that need to be done. And what we've seen from the Biden administration, particularly as it relates to the Afghans after the fall of Kabul, is that they shortchanged that process and they allowed hundreds of thousands of Afghans to come here in the United States to be resettled only to do the security checks after the right. fact. And if they're going to do that again with folks from Gaza, I think the concern is still there is how do we know who these individuals are? Because vetting them is going to be very, very difficult if you're relying on data and information from Gaza authorities, what little authorities there are. And so it's going to be very difficult to vet these individuals.
Right. I was going to ask you that to draw a comparison between what they did in Afghanistan and bringing those individuals over here. We still don't know exactly what risk are contained within those individuals they brought over. This would only heighten concern by those who are trying to keep this nation safe from within.
Well, it should would. Instead, I think the better approach is why don't we work with allies in the region and elsewhere to say and allow them to take these folks in. Again, trying to resettle them closest to home. So if conditions improve in Gaza and they're able to go back, then they're able to do that very quickly. You know, Tony, you and I both know that once they get here in the United States, there's very few that will actually leave the United States. And so that is not really refugee resettlement. That is just moving them to a different country here in the United States. So I think we really need to keep that in play and instead encourage our friends and our allies and others around the world, but particularly in that region, to take these individuals in if they are truly, you know, needing to be relocated.
Isn't it true that most of them have not wanted to take them in because of the security risk of being certain that Hamas operatives are infiltrating the civilian population?
You're exactly right. It's the same concern that we had with the Afghans, which is, you know, after the fall of Kabul, everyone was saying, hey, look, we need to help those that helped the United States, those interpreters and other folks. Instead, what we saw from the Biden administration is them paroling in 400,000 Afghans. Well, not all of them helped the U.S. military. And so, but we had a very difficult time understanding who was friend and who was foe. And you're going to have the same process unfold here in Gaza, trying to understand who is someone that either we're comfortable with or who is someone that we really can't verify who they are. And so their connections and their ties, perhaps to Hamas and to other groups, is questionable. And those are the individuals you don't want in the United States. But again, the Biden administration doesn't seem to be concerned about this. I'm afraid that we're in a presidential election year, and they are making certain decisions. I've seen them make certain decisions for political reasons more than anything else.
Final question for you, Chad. How can this be stopped? If the administration wants to do it, who can stop it?
Well, it's hard. They've got a lot of authority, the president does, to allow refugees to come in. I mean, Congress can stop it at the end of the day. It will take both houses of Congress to do that. But the administration has some ability under the refugee cap and the refugee authority that they have to bring individuals in. But accountability and oversight is what the Congress can do.
Chad Wolf, I want to thank you, as always, for joining us today and appreciate your insights.
All right. Thank you.
And folks, I should underscore the fact that this is another one of those elections have consequences issue. As I mentioned, I was at the border when Chad Wolf was acting Secretary of Homeland Security, and it was like a ghost town. It stopped the illegal crossings into the border. If there's a will, there's a way. Ultimately, the only accountability is going to come at Election Day. The American people have to vote. Pray, vote, stand. All right, coming up next, Secretary of Education Miguel Cardona testified before Congress today. He was called upon to resign because he's received a failing grade by the chairman of the House Education Committee. We're going to talk more about today's hearing with Illinois Congresswoman Mary Miller next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Lila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to have you with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Again, to join us on May the 19th, text Israel to 67742. That is our Pray For and Stand With Israel Sunday. Well, earlier today, the House Committee on Education Workforce, the chair, Virginia Fox, called for the resignation of Education Secretary Miguel Cardona. Now, this came as the secretary testified before the committee while seeking $162 million for his budget, a $22 million increase for the department's civil rights investigations. Now, other Republicans on the committee assailed the secretary for the Biden administration's rewrite of Title IX, which places girls and women in danger. And, of course, the anti-Semitic riots that are occurring on college campuses across the country. Joining me now to discuss this is Congresswoman Mary Miller. She serves on the House Committee on Education and Workforce and the House Committee on Agriculture. She represents the 15th Congressional District of Illinois. Congresswoman Miller, welcome back to Washington Watch. Always great to see you.
Thank you for having me.
Now, there were many issues that Secretary Cardona had to answer for today, including the anti-Semitic campus riots and the Biden administration's Title IX rewrite. Now, your questions focused on the dangers to girls and women from the Title IX revisions. Speak to that.
Yes. Well, he's obviously ignoring his duty to uphold the original intent of the Title IX rule, which was to give our girls and women opportunities in athletics and education, opportunities for scholarships, and also to protect our girls from discrimination. And he kept going back to how he's all about protecting everybody. And I kept pointing out to him that he is choosing, he's choosing to protect the boys, and he's putting our girls at risk.
The secretary, as you laid out, pretty much deflected your questions regarding boys competing in girls' sports. How big of an issue is this, as you're hearing from parents?
it's a big issue. In fact, I just told my staffer that's here, I think it's an 80% issue. You have to be insane to want to allow men and boys and girls private spaces and their showers, to have them punished, to have them kicked off teams, forbidden from participating in athletic events. Like we saw, there were five girls in West Virginia recently that are now kicked off the track and field teams and not being allowed to compete. In Wisconsin, we had young girls kicked off the volleyball team because they complained about biological men or boys in their bathroom. The girls in West Virginia refused to compete against a biological male. In Illinois, some girls felt uncomfortable with boys in their bathroom, and they were accused of harassment. And the, you know, they're going to set up these Title IX, issue the rules to enforce the guidelines. Mm-hmm. And he couldn't even tell us today what it's going to be based on. In fact, he tried to say that he hasn't put out any guidance on it, which 3 years ago we put out guidance, and we put that up and pointed out to him that he absolutely has been putting out guidance on this issue.
Let me play a clip of one of your colleagues, Utah Congressman Burgess Owens, to your point about girls and refusing to protect them. Play clip number 11.
If your daughter was reported she felt uncomfortable in a boy's presence in a bathroom or locker room, would that be considered by your administration discrimination or bigotry?
As an educator for over 25 years...
You can't say yes or no to that?
Did he respond to the question? Was he willing to give a yes or no answer?
Well, he's always deflecting. They don't want to answer questions. They don't want to accept responsibility for this. But I pointed out to him that he is going to be remembered as the education secretary under Joe Biden who erased girls' sports for an entire generation. And, you know, I did bring up, too, what is his guidance going to be on how to handle a situation where a health teacher or a biology teacher states clearly that only men can have babies, and another student goes and complains that they believe this is harassment. You know, what are they going to do about that? But they want to say that they want to be hypocrites and say, well, in the biology class, we could say there's two genders and men can't have babies, but in athletics, we're going to be gender fluid and recognize gender identity, which that was another question I asked him. Could he define gender identity? Which he couldn't.
Well,
didn't want to.
You're making progress if you get them to admit that only women can have babies, because they've actually testified to the opposite. Mary Miller, always great to see you. Thanks so much for being here and for holding them accountable on Capitol Hill.
Well, thank you for the great work you're doing.
All right, thank you. Mary Miller from Illinois. This is insane. It really is. If you just step back, put the politics aside, okay? Teaching our kids that boys, girls, there's no difference, or you can be whatever you want to be. I mean, this is a rejection of truth. And speaking of that, we're going to actually talk about that coming up next. Meg Kilgannon's going to join me here in studio. Boy Scouts today announcing a name change, Scouting America. Boy Scouts doesn't work anymore because girls and everything else are in Scouts. But, you know, this institution has lost its way. We're going to talk about that next. What happens when you reject truth? Don't go away. More Washington Watch ahead.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. Good to have you with us. And again, if you would like to join us on May the 19th for our Pray for and Stand with Israel Sunday, text Israel to 67742. All right, as I mentioned at the top of the program, the Boy Scouts today announcing a name change. It's now Scouting America. They want to be more inclusive because girls are now in Boy Scouts. Here's the problem. Boy Scouts, they're a shell of what they used to be because they have lost their way. And this is, I tell you what, it should be a case study in what happens when you compromise. Unfortunately, I actually think it is a prophetic message to the nation of what happens when you reject truth. This was an organization for literally over a century, stood as an entity that helped train the next generation of boys. Its whole purpose when it started was to help boys become men and eventually soldiers, to be able to defend the values that made Western civilization great. That's not what they are any longer. But again, unfortunately, I think it is a prophetic message to the entire culture. Joining me now to talk about this and much more is Meg Kilgannon, Senior Fellow for Education Studies here at the Family Research Council. And by the way, she served in the Department of Education during the Trump administration. But you were not a Boy Scout.
I was not a Boy Scout. I wasn't a Girl Scout either. We grew up in the country, and so my parents didn't think we really needed to do it.
your thoughts on the Boy Scouts making this name change, trying to rebrand themselves after they, you know, go bankrupt, Scouting America?
Scouting America. I mean, I guess they're Scouting America for some kids to join their club because they
mean nothing anymore. It's
really sad. This is, you know, as a Catholic, we have this issue of the altar servers that serve on the altar. And in the diocese where they only allow boys to do that, there are many boys who serve because it still means something.
Yeah.
It's important. It's important to have spaces where men do manly things and women do things that women like to do.
So let's talk about that, Meg, in the area of education. Why is it so offensive to draw a line between boys and girls?
Well, I don't know, except that the nation has come under a great cloud of confusion over if there are boys or girls. And so it's when children are going to school and saying, you know, I think I might have been born in the wrong body and I might be a girl if they're actually a boy, and the school feels compelled to affirm them in that. I mean, obviously there's something very, very wrong.
Can you explain that from a cultural standpoint, or can you not look? I cannot look at this issue unless I look at it, including a spiritual perspective
right.
to this. God made them male and female. Jesus
right.
said that in Matthew chapter 19. I think this is the progression of rebellion against God.
And I think it really is. It is the ultimate attack of demonic forces on the human person, right? To attack a growing child is the very work of adolescence, to form your identity, figure out what is God's call in your life? What are you going to be when you grow up? What are you going to do with your life? To attack at your very core, the fact of whether or not you're even a male or female, that's truly debilitating, right? It doesn't get much more basic than that.
Well, the devil always has his helpers, and I think we saw them on Capitol Hill today.
Well, I'm afraid we might have, yes. The hearing, Secretary Cardona's testimony was remarkable in many ways. I mean, here's a man who has done things that he was told not to do and not done things he was told to do by Congress, testifying before Congress. The Democrats were even asking him very gently about the problems that he's had with the FAFSA form for federal student loans. Congress passed the law, and they were supposed to fix that. They didn't fix it. In fact, they made it worse, very, very much worse. So he had that to account for. Then Congress and the Supreme Court said, don't forgive student loans, but he spent all of this time forgiving, you know, canceling student debt, to the tune of about $6 billion, for starters, right?
But, and he didn't answer any questions when it came to the Title IX.
Right. He didn't get asked many questions on that, and he didn't answer any questions on that because there are so many other things going on. You have the anti-Semitism on college campuses and the riots that are happening. The national assessment scores are the lowest they've ever been in the history of the tests. There's massive absentee problem in public schools. So he's come there asking for more money, an yeah. increase in his budget.
$22 million for civil rights investigations.
Just for investigations.
What are they going to investigate since they're turning a blind eye to the rioting on campuses?
They're going to investigate whether Louisiana is enforcing this Title IX law. Because
so that's what they're going to use the money for.
That's exactly right.
But Louisiana is not alone. Don't pick on my state.
I'm happy with your state.
I am too. But they're not alone. I mean,
no.
Today Arkansas filed suit yes. against the Title IX regulations.
Right. We have at least 15 states who filed lawsuits.
So what does that mean?
So they are hoping that the court will at least give an injunction against the enforcement of this rule, meaning that the states that are in these lawsuits, that the courts will say that, no, these don't apply to you.
Just those states.
It's possible that they could do a nationwide injunction, but it's most likely that they will enforce it against just the states involved in the lawsuit.
You might likely have mixed decisions coming from different jurisdictions, so you could have a conflict.
You could. In which case, maybe the Supreme Court would be involved.
But this could carry over into the election so that this is not resolved until after the election. Possible?
Yes. I think that's very, very much the case. And in the places, you know, there's still the problem of the states who are doing this on their own anyway. In California and in Oregon and Washington State, they're living by the rules just like Title IX is trying to enforce on Louisiana, right? They're already doing that. So parents in those states don't have the assurance that when they send their child to school and they know his name is John when he leaves house, that he's not going to become home named Susie, right? And that, I think, is a right that should be enforced in, for every parent.
This is, I've run out of words to describe what this administration is doing. And they're doing it fast and furious, not to borrow a term from the previous the Obama administration, but they are pushing this very hard because they know historically if they get this through the door, rarely does it get pushed back out.
Exactly. And I think that really is never truer than the case of the Department of Education right now. They know that with the way they're handling this debt cancellation, it really cannot be undone.
Right.
It once they do this, it's done. And you and I are going to have to pay for the college loans of the people who are, you know, have agreed to pay a loan, but then are not, in fact, going to pay it.
Meg Gilgannon, final question for you. Pray certainly is something we need to be doing constantly a lot in this administration. What else can be done?
Well, it's a big election year this year, and there are lots of things going on. There's a presidential election. There are local elections. There are both of the parties are going to have their conventions. They're going to issue platforms. If you have concerns about where people stand on these issues, you should make your concerns known to people in your community.
The election, pray, vote, stand, what we say here. The 15 states, their challenges are the product of elections.
Yes.
And it's so important to be involved at the local. A lot of people think in a presidential election, they're always just thinking presidential. But these state elections are critical, especially now with attorneys general that hold administrations like this accountable.
Yes, and states, even local school board members,
right,
are so important when it comes to enforcing regulations like this, when it comes to developing the policies associated with this.
And that's the way our founders intended this in our federalist system, is to be, you know, even the state and local providing a check on the federal.
Absolutely, absolutely. So the point is that now you really need to be engaged.
Pray.
Be engaged. Pray.
Vote.
Be engaged with your family.
Vote.
Take your family to the polls and stand with.
Meg Gilgannon, always great to see you.
Good to see you,
Thanks
John.
For stopping by.
Thanks.
Well, so much, folks, to deal with. And I want to work in another topic here because there, as I mentioned at the top of the program, there's, according to reports, the Biden administration has delayed a munitions supply to Israel in order to send a political message. Now, remember last week, the Congress approved a supplemental funding bill that provided funds for Ukraine, for Israel, and for Taiwan. Now, the driving force for that among the Republicans in the House weren't big on Ukraine, was to get much-needed support to Israel. Now, when Iran attacked Israel, it's estimated somewhere between $500 and $750 million in munitions were expended in the Iron Dome and David Sling. Well, the political reporting that the Biden administration slowing this down. But members of Congress are responding. Joining me now to discuss this is Senator Roger Marshall of Kansas. He serves on four Senate committees, including the Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee. Dr. Marshall, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, always great to be with you.
So, Senator, you have written to the president asking for answers and whether or not these reports are true. What have you found out?
Well, Tony, of course, nothing so far, except we continue to get confirmation that indeed the president is not sending Israel the weapons that Congress approved. You know, to your point earlier, many Republicans voted for this big funding bill because of the Israel funding. I still couldn't get there because we hadn't secured our border yet. So Joe Biden does another bait and switch on us. He tricks people into voting for his Ukraine funding And then most likely he's diverting that these weapons for Israel to Ukraine. And it just coincidentally coincides with Israel, you know, ramping up their attack on Rafah as well, which I think, you know, is more than just a coincidence.
So this is in part, as you I hear you saying, to put pressure on Israel to come to the conclusion that the Biden administration wants Israel, and that is basically to walk away from Gaza, allowing Hamas to continue. Is it also playing electoral politics by playing to their base here in the United States, this pro-Hamas base that is increasingly becoming vocal in the Democratic Party?
You know, no doubt about it that Joe Biden is losing in all the major swing states, including Michigan. There is a large pro-Palestinian group up there that he is trying to cater to. There's no doubt that this is part of the equation. This has been a tough needle to thread for Joe Biden and Democrats. We've seen them abandoning Israel to appease that group of folks up in Michigan. At the same time, his policy of appeasement has led to just worse crisis after worse crisis. This would have all been over at least 2 months ago if Joe Biden hadn't pushed back so hard on Israel. These protests would have never happened on campuses. If we had a strong leader in the White House, this would have been over months ago, if it ever would have happened.
So, Senator Marshall, I mean, I ask you this question because this is what's on the minds, I think, of most of our viewers and listeners. Congress allocated this money. We're always told that Congress has the purse strings. So they've allocated this money for the sole purpose of standing with our ally Israel. What can Congress do to make sure that the Biden administration does what Congress allocated money for it to do?
Look, we'll need an inspector general to file some type of report and then try to get that through the court system. And the Supreme Court may have to weigh in here as well. But I think most importantly is we can bring it to the attention of the American people that this White House has a total disregard for the law, for law and order. He's proven over and over again that he does unconstitutional things, even after the Supreme Court says, don't do this forgiveness of student loans. And ultimately, we the people have the final say of this just 6 months from now in November.
Yeah, this is as difficult as it was, as you pointed out, to get Republicans to come to a place to vote for this measure, that $95 billion that funded Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan, for the administration to basically do a bait and switch, to lie about it and not do what they asked Congress to fund. I mean, I don't see how the Congress could ever vote for anything else from this administration.
Yeah, Tony, again, I just encourage people to not pay attention to what Joe Biden says. Watch what he does. You know, this morning, he's mourning the Holocaust situation, but at the same time, he's diverting weapons away from Israel to help him. At the same time, he's pro-Iran. You and I both know in this world in the Middle East, you cannot be pro-Iran and pro-Israel. Iran is the country that says death to America, death to Israel. God has called us to stand with the people of Israel. And that's certainly where my stance is. I think we have a spiritual meaning in this, a spiritual reason to stand beside the people of Israel. They are God's chosen people. Scripture tells us to stand by them. Joe Biden says one thing, but then he funds Iran, which leads to the funding of Hamas and all these other anti-Israel terrorist groups.
You're absolutely right. Senator Roger Marshall, we're out of time, but I want to thank you for joining us today. It's always great to talk with you.
Thank you, Tony.
Again, folks, there you have it. Elections have consequences. Pray, vote, stand. We've not heard the last of this. All right. I had a conversation with the speaker about this morning. I think you're going to hear more this week. We'll continue to track this to make sure that America stands with Israel. And one way we can do that is by praying. Join us on May the 19th for our Pray for and Stand with Israel Sunday. Find out more about that, go to TonyPerkins.com or text Israel to 67742. All right, we're out of time, but until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything that you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.